It's a Halloween-tastic Totally Football show. We'll be talking about ghouls in Scotland, troubled spirits at Spurs, scares at Stamford Bridge, and fan behaviour in Edinburgh that was beyond grave. Also, witches, the best Premier League fixture this weekend. There's much to sink our teeth into in this Totally Football show in association with Paddy Power. That's enough, Halloween producer Ben. In the pod today, listener, Ur Capelloni.
E Pelatino.
There's James Horncastle there. These are the charming nicknames that Gabriele Marcotti's children have bestowed upon us. Also here with us today, Daniel Story.
Good morning, James.
A busy author.
Have
you finished your second?
Yeah, it's a secret at the moment, but yes, I finished writing
it. All right. And fresh from the commentary box at Stamford Bridge, Matt Davis-Adams.
Hiya.
How are you, Matt?
Really good, thank you, yes.
Excellent. All right, then. You witnessed Chelsea derby in the Carabao Cup. You must have been busy because you had 5 goals in the first half, 4 of them scored by Derby. So how much did they win by?
It was incredible. It was a really, really bizarre game. First of all, Fikayo Tomori on loan from Chelsea. Chelsea had given permission for their 2 on loan players to play in this game, which is unusual in English football.
Agent Tomori.
Yeah, Agent Tomori. 5 minutes in front of the 4,000 Derby supporters who'd filled the shed, goes to clear it, completely misses the ball. It hits his standing foot and spins into the net. Rather embarrassing for him,
just
to put it mildly.
The worst thing that Derby could want, you know, a championship side playing at Stamford Bridge, and that's probably game over, no?
Yeah, you would have thought so, but Chelsea were so poor defensively, it was quite astounding, and Derby were quickly back level just a couple of minutes later. Jack Marriott, well-taken goal. Then we get more comedy from Comedy's Richard Keogh, who, you know, I just have to look at and laugh, and he obliged us with another wonderful own goal.
What's so funny? Is it his kind of like spud hairdo or what?
It's his eyes, I think, for me. He just looks like he's always been surprised or, you know, received some startling news or something, and he certainly had some hair. He really did, yeah. That was a good own goal, but it wasn't in Tomori's league.
So poor Frank Lampard decided to just battle back to make it 1-1, and Keogh does another one.
Keogh does that. Frank on the sidelines does the calm down gesture excessively.
And not surprisingly, because of course Derby are the team that this weekend dropped 2 points at the death with their clash in the clash with Borough with that Jadon Bogle own goal.
Yeah, Jadon Bogle probably feeling a bit better about life because he didn't score the funniest own goal for Derby this season or even this week. But they quickly equalise. More poor defending from Chelsea. Martin Waghorn tapping him for 2-2. Waghorn missed a great chance. He should have scored again. And then Fabregas, deflected shot. Off Tomori again, which goes in, but the goal probably shouldn't have stood.
Oh, really? Why's that?
Foul by Zappacosta in the build-up. Mm. The officials claimed that that happened off the pitch. Frank Lampard didn't think so. I didn't either. Fair bit of play went on before then. Derby could have stopped it. 3-2. That's
just going into half-time. Now, that end of the first half, Matt, Derby were all over playing their Lampard Dismo ball, their Lampard ball.
It sort of pains me a little bit to say as a Nottingham Forest supporter, but they were so good, Derby. I mean, their pressing of Chelsea's defence was incredible. They've got such a really nice blend of, they've got this experienced spine, Carson, Keogh, Tom Huddleston, who's 31, bizarrely. I assumed he would be nearly 40 by now, who just dominated Fabregas in a way which I've not seen in a long time. And then they've just got this energy around them. Wilson, Lawrence, Mason Mount, they look a terrific side.
The team that, of course, had won hearts by knocking Man United out, you know, because of their spunky performance, etc. At Old Trafford in the previous round, be honest, were you rooting for Derby a little bit?
No. I would never do that as a Nottingham Forest supporter, but also as somebody who's paid by the game, my interest in Chelsea and cup competitions goes through the roof.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. But do you think that it was interesting the way that Derby approached playing Chelsea, and particularly targeting certain members of Chelsea's back line? I was wondering if Lampard thought, I've got Gary Cahill's number. I know exactly where to hit him.
Potentially. I actually think the weaker link last night was Andreas Christensen, and that was illustrated by the fact that Sarri took him off with about half an hour to go and replaced him with David Luiz to try and strengthen the defence. There's been two defences for Chelsea this season, the one that plays in cup competitions and the one that plays in the Premier League. So it's an entirely cup-based back four last night of Zappa Costa, Christensen, Cahill and Emerson, and all four of them struggled, to be honest. Cahill was better when he moved over to the left side, but Christensen, who's obviously his dad, who is his agent's been making a lot of noises about, well, if I'm not playing, I'll have to leave. He didn't stake a claim to be playing more regularly, unfortunately for him. Maybe that's because he hasn't had much game time. But Derby found the weakness and exploited it really well and should have won the game.
So basically no further scoring then in the second half until the dying seconds when David Nugent strides onto the ball and...
doesn't score.
Oh, but it was so close. It hits the inside of the post and it comes out.
Yeah, and
poor Derby.
Yeah, you've come to the wrong person because I'm also a Nottingham Forest fan of the Nottingham Forest media mafia.
I'm not a Forest fan. Full disclosure there.
Were you rooting for Derby here, James?
Well, yeah, because I was excited by how they were playing. I mean, that first half was just extraordinary. Yeah, I think the Carabao Cup does sometimes reserve these kind of surprises, but at the same time, I think I was expecting just a kind of polite love-in for Frank Lampard, and instead, again, Derby came very close to putting out a top Premier League side.
There is an interesting point in what Matt says about Chelsea, not only their defence, but most of their team being changed completely for cup competitions. We saw with Jurgen Klopp last season that he rotated partly to keep players rested, but also because he felt that if he was going to pick up injuries, he wanted players to be up to speed with his football when they came into the team. Now, as a new manager at a club with pretty high ambitions, it seems quite risky of Sarri to keep picking the same, basically the same 11 for Premier League games when he's trying to imprint this new style of football, and then sort of look surprised when players like Christensen, who came on leaps and bounds last season, now looks pretty flummoxed by playing in this team. And it just seems like a really risky scenario because the young players are going to think, well, I'm probably better off out of here. And the experienced players like Gary Cahill are going to think, well, my time here is coming to an end. And you can suddenly find a situation where they get two or three injuries in January, February, and players come in who are woefully out of form.
It is a real interesting dynamic that Sarri creates at clubs, because the players that he plays regularly absolutely love him and see an incredible development in their games. I thought it was interesting this summer when Carlo Ancelotti came in at Napoli, because people around the club was talking just how the mood was so much better because everyone felt like they were involved, and he has used, 22 players. I think the guys around the first team, they find it very hard to be basically sat around, clearly not trusted, and as Daniel was saying, to be kind of thrown in and play what is a very sophisticated system, which is very different for defenders from the one that they were playing last year, it is a complicated one.
Matt, any word on whether your performance was good enough to earn a role in their Premier League matches?
I'm hoping so. I mean, you're the man who knows more about Maurizio Sarri than I do these days. I've got to say, I can't stop watching now after your great piece with him. What Jorginho said, every time the ball comes towards Sarri on the touchline and he does deliberately move away from it, it's really noticeable. Now I've spotted it once. It's ever so strange, especially last night you had Frank Lampard always getting it quickly, chucking it back into play.
So Jorginho, this was a piece for Chelsea TV in which Jorginho revealed that one of Sarri's many superstitions is the fact that he will not touch the match ball under any circumstances, no matter how much Chelsea need the ball back on the field. Frank Lampard, I mean, still rather popular at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, and it was really nice, actually. He had a nice line after the game where he said, I went out via the back door and I've come back in through the front, which was a nice way of putting it, because he left kind of quietly and with Jose Mourinho taking a couple of digs at him. And, you know, I can't think of any other club that will have a midfielder as their all-time leading goal scorer. It's incredible that he did that.
Roma?
Hamsik.
Oh, okay, yeah, no. Yeah.
211 goals from midfield is quite ridiculous. And obviously, Jody Morris back with him last night as well. Between them, they won 14 trophies, played over 800 games for Chelsea. They both had big banners in the stadium for them. So it was a bizarre thing to see a whole stadium chanting the name of a manager, and he kind of did a lap of honour afterwards, which was nice. And it was sort of in the spirit of the game. And as we were talking about with the Liverpool game at Stamford Bridge a few weeks back, it does seem that there is that spirit of, with Sarri in particular, let's enjoy the game. That's what we're here for. Easier to do when you win it, I suppose. But yeah, they were lucky to get through, and they get Bournemouth in the quarterfinal at home for the second season in a row.
We'll talk about those quarterfinals very shortly. Just to mention that it's been a good week in the Cup for Chelsea, though, because they took on Fiorentina in the last 16 of the Champions League. This is the Women's Champions League, and beat them 7-0 on aggregate. Well, 6-0 this week.
Yeah, they only won 1-0 at home, so I was a bit concerned. But Frank Kirby hat-trick last night helped them to a 6-0 win in the return.
Right. Who are they going to be facing, do you know?
No.
Okay. All right, let's talk about what we do know, and that's League Cup quarterfinals.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Now, as Matt was mentioning, Chelsea facing Bournemouth, who beat Norwich the other games this week. Arsenal beat Blackpool 2-1, to no one's great surprise, but perhaps narrower than might have been expected. Borough knocked out Palace 1-0 with a special goal from Lewis Wing.
Okay. Where does he play?
I'm not sure. Where does he play, actually, Daniel?
I think he does.
Yeah, Matt, you're doing Football League Show next week, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Where does Lewis Wing play for Borough?
He plays in midfield.
Okay. Burton Albion did for Nottingham Forest, 3-2. Much shaking of heads here. Yeah, Nigel Clough's Burton Albion.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on too much about Forest, but the problem they've got is that they signed so many players in the summer and the previous window and the previous window for that, and every window seemingly for ad infinitum, that they made 9 or 10 changes again, and there's no consistency of performance.
Did they make the changes because it was a cup competition?
Yeah, and they've picked a weakened team in the cup, but the problem is they have now got basically between 28 and 32 players who would consider themselves worthy of a place in a championship team, because they've bought so many players and not sold many, that the competition for places is ridiculous. And the idea is that competition for places brings out better performance from everyone, but the alternative to that is that everyone just feels like everything's slightly built on sand, I think.
Right. You'd rather see a regular lineup with one or two changes?
Yeah, I'd rather see a smaller squad on with a lower wage bill, yes.
Right. Fair
enough. A wasted opportunity this game as well. They're playing a League One side who they could easily have beaten. They've ended up getting Middlesbrough in the next round. Forest could quite conceivably be in the semi-finals of the League Cup, and they...
Yeah, Forest hadn't been in a quarter-final of that competition for 25 years, so there's really no excuse for taking that lightly and playing badly.
Mm. Man City will be playing this evening against Fulham. Leicester's match with Saints was postponed following the tragedy at the King Power last weekend. And Spurs got a 3-1 win at West Ham at London Stadium, where they could have been playing, of course, had they not gone on, you know, had things worked out differently. Anyway, it was a much-needed win, wasn't it? 2 goals from Son, Heung-min Son. His first goal since March. Mm. Will this help much to lift the mood of doom and gloom that's surrounding this club that's off to their best Premier League start ever?
I don't think it will, no. I think there is a very understandable now, kind of irreversible...
irreversible?
Irreversible impatience with the Wembley situation.
Right.
So it will only be reversed when they move. I don't think the move will ever get better. You can see that. I think it was the Times that are really... nice graphic that showed the percentage capacity full of Wembley last season and this season. And I mean, it's startling. You know, some games are 30-40% down.
Well, I think there were about, was it 25,000 seats empty for Monday night's game, which was a huge one against Man City, potentially. Mm. You don't have to be a football club to appreciate what they've got spiralling debts and their front room's a mess. And that's going to depress anybody.
It is, but I think the supporters would have accepted that as a kind of necessary part of, you know, moving backwards to move forward if the club had met them halfway with things like the communication.
Right.
They quite rightly feel that they've been willfully misled over the issues in order to keep them buying tickets and try and keep them sweet for as long as possible. And that goodwill has now completely run out.
So that drip, drip, drip of information about when the move's finally going to happen. When is the move going to happen? What's the latest
My
story?
Suspicion... Well, they still claim that it can happen in January. My suspicion is that they won't be there till the start of next season.
Yeah.
Always seemed completely unrealistic, not to bring it back to Chelsea, but when they said they were going to redevelop Stamford Bridge, they said we'll be away for 3 seasons.
Mm.
To get it done in one season just seemed totally unrealistic to me. And you've got people being sent out their season cards for the new stadium that they can't use, which just sort of rubs salt into the wound. You know, you've got the image of the NFL logo being branded onto the centre circle for the Premier League game on Monday.
That's going to sting the Premier League.
I mean, it just made it look slightly ludicrous. Yeah. And I feel for Maurizio Pochettino because he wasn't given any money to strengthen his squad. And regardless of what he might say in public, I'm sure he would have wanted to add a couple of people to
that. Well, he's quite happy about saying that in public, actually.
He seems to be now, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's wasn't really over interesting. The situation with Real Madrid coinciding with Pochettino sending all sorts of signals, spoken and unspoken. You had the comments that he made before and after the Man City game where he described himself as the most unhappy he's been for 5 years as a manager and afterwards then talking about how the club was focusing on too many things and needed to focus on just winning football matches. And then, and I want to read too much into this, Dele Alli signs a new deal and Pochettino's got a look that he does for signing on pictures. He always has the arm over the shoulder and the kind of half smile, and he's done it for every single one of their recent signings. What look does he give in this picture with Dele Alli? No look, because he's not there. It's just Dele Alli on his own.
Wow.
Lonely.
I do think Pochettino is basically in the perfect position in that he, having a successful management career is not just about improving clubs, it's also about taking the perfect time to leave that club and make your promotion. Like the accusation against Marco Silva is he's done it too quickly, and I think the accusation against someone like maybe even David Wagner is that he's not chosen the right time to try and get that move. Pochettino's in the perfect position. The two jobs in Europe you'd say would be ideal for him, and that he would want are Manchester United and Real Madrid, and both potentially could be coming up between now and next August. So I don't see why he wouldn't be laying these seeds of doubt, because he's earned the goodwill and the right to do it.
Do you think Real Madrid still represents that dream job that everybody usually talks about it as?
I think it was similar to the when Zidane left, it was similar to United after Ferguson, although in a very different way, in that the only way was down.
Mm.
I think now it's kind of replacing Moyes at Manchester United. It's that actually they're so down on their luck that maybe the only way is up from here. So yeah, I think he probably would jump at it.
I think it's one of those odd situations where Real Madrid, most famous team in the world, won European Cup 4 out of 5 years. As they said in the statement they put out sacking Julen Lopetegui, they've got 8 Ballon d'Or players, 8 players who are on the Ballon d'Or shortlist. But it does feel like, going back to the summer, there were a number of managers who turned that job down. And I think when it comes to Conte, a lot's been made about Sergio Ramos's comments after the Clásico. I would not be at all surprised if Conte looks at that job or has maybe just flicked through his Rolodex and called Zizou or called Antonio Pintos and just sort of think maybe this isn't the right sort of rebound job to go into. Whereas right. United, for all the problems that they have, they're not building a new stadium, which will have an impact. Yeah, the roof that they're putting on the Bernabeu will have an impact on the spending that Real Madrid want to do. They've got a team which I think you can take a few parts out and then you've got a really good team. I think with Real Madrid, it's going to be a more complicated overhaul. I think in some respects, the United job is more attractive than the Real Madrid job right now.
Interesting.
If it were to come up.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's an interesting set of scenarios there. Let's just, reiterate the fact that Spurs are very much in the hunt for glory at the top of the table. They're within 5 points of first place, one of five teams in that group. They are off to their best Premier League start ever. They will eventually move into their new stadium, which presumably will not just boost morale, but also their ability to go and sign players. And they have just secured a new deal with Dele Alli, as well as keeping hold of the stars like Harry Kane last summer. So, we could soon be looking at an entirely different situation for Spurs. No?
Yeah, and the unknown factor that Daniel Levy would push forward a self-defence of his running of the club is that he believes that this Tottenham long-term project is not built on the manager.
Right.
As Southampton
really?
Tried to do. Yeah, he believes that by signing up the players on long-term deals and by, if they get the manager they want, and I suspect they probably would want Eddie Howe, he believes that he can kind of keep this going. He doesn't believe it's firmly built on Pochettino, but that's a... For all neutral observers, that's a pretty big if, I think.
Harris at Wally says, yeah, Eddie Howe, ideal replacement if Pochettino goes. One thing, just on Monday, had Lamella put that ball away, very different story.
Yeah, I mean, there are a million ifs and buts in football matches.
That's
and
quite
David
a big,
Silva.
Big
yeah, but David Silva had a chance where if he'd have controlled it, he would have rolled the ball into an empty net as well. And Spurs, every player on that pitch played pretty badly. The problem for Spurs is that, you know, they did lose, and they did lose to a team that has far more resources than them. But I think in the cut and thrust of a Premier League season, it's very easy to forget that about things like revenue and spending, because Spurs fans have they're the only club that's finished in the top four in the last three seasons, and therefore they've got used to it.
Mm. Well, they've got Wolves away this weekend. Wolves who've had back-to-back defeats. Is that a good game for Spurs to try and bounce back?
Yeah, potentially. I think so. It's really interesting that this game is on Saturday night at 7:45.
Is it?
Yeah, and it's been moved because Spurs are playing at 6 o'clock against PSV on Tuesday. So Sky and the Premier League agreed to move it from its original 1:30 Sunday slot back to Saturday night. Now, that opens a huge can of worms for me, because think of Jose Mourinho, Maurizio Sarri, Pep Guardiola. Their constant complaint about scheduling of Premier League games around Champions League games or Europa League games. Well, the Premier League have moved one now, so surely if they've done it for Tottenham, they've got to do it for everybody else now.
Which certainly happens in other leagues. Yeah. You'll have teams playing on Fridays, etc. The key thing here is the reason that Mourinho et al. Have so much money to spend is because of the TV deals that they have, which are much more favourable than in other countries, which is why the TV companies expect to be able to have a prime-time slot rather than, say, a Friday evening one.
I suspect the Premier League are actually secretly quite pleased about the whole issue. I think if Spurs were trying to move it to a less TV-friendly time, then maybe they would be a little bit more reticent. But this idea of prime-time Saturday evening football, I think the Premier League actually really like it.
Fair dues. All right.
But Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, and then you've got a make-or-break game in the Champions League. I think that's tricky. And I think I think Pochettino generally has done a very good job at insulating his team from all the various things going around them. He can maintain their concentration for this one against a very good team, although, as one you admit, that's lost back-to-back games, hasn't scored in back-to-back games. But Wolves probably have to look at this as a real opportunity, given Spurs have to put everything into that game against PSV.
Mm. Outstanding. All right, well, we'll talk more about what's coming up this weekend in the Premier League in a second or two. Still to come, of course. We've got a big roundup of a very bizarre midweek of action around the world in football. But back to the Prem after this.
Tuesday and Wednesday nights were so exciting, but now I've got nothing to look forward to. So me and the wife are taking up ballroom dancing. Look at this lovely number 8.
Put down that sequin shirt, sad Arsenal fan. With the same game multi from Paddy Power, the Champions League is exciting again, even for you. And you'll get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same game multi lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. Applies to pre-match fourfold same game multi bets on Champions League matches. Max free bet £10 per customer per day. Minimum odds. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
We are 10 weeks into the season. That's about, what, a quarter of the season done. 5 teams within 5 points of each other at the top. 2 of them facing each other this weekend, Arsenal and Liverpool. Man City, who are joint top or just ahead on goal difference, have the equivalent of a session in the Nets, basically. They're hosting Saints. Chelsea host Palace. That's probably fair, isn't it?
I saw Southampton last week. Yeah, they're not good.
All right. Chelsea host Palace, who got beat by Borough in the League Cup, as we mentioned. Spurs face, well, their own long, dark tea time of the soul, really. I mean, Wolves nominally, but essentially their own unrealised hopes and expectations. We'll see how they respond to that. Let's talk about City, who did win on Monday. James, you won't have seen this because you were all over Lazio-Inter.
Mm. Which was a really exciting game, but we talk about that on Galazzo, don't we?
We do. Inter's 6th win in a row, up to 2nd place. Anyway, but at Wembley, meanwhile, a far less interesting 1-0 win for Pep Guardiola's side. That's now 6 clean sheets in a row. 3 goals conceded in their 10 matches so far. How many shots per goal was it that Saints are taking to score? They haven't scored in the last 22 attempts on goal.
Yeah, Southampton are going about 4% conversion rate.
Right, and City have only allowed 17 shots on target all season.
And Manchester United allowed 8 at home to Newcastle.
Wow. A lot of numbers. What does it all add up to?
Yeah, but City didn't defend well in that game.
Game against Spurs.
And Pep Guardiola afterwards was saying that we have to take sort of lessons from games like these, because if we defend like that in the sort of final stages of the Champions League, his words were, we will not survive, which I thought was pretty pretty strong.
He likes being dramatic, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Guys, did you know, here's a stat, Aymeric Laporte, yeah?
Mm.
874 passes this season. Only Jorginho has made more.
They've never lost a Premier League game when Laporte's played either. And they needed...
So he's passed more than any Man City player, than any other Man City player.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
He's very good. But, I mean, City needed stoppage time winners in both games against Southampton last season. But as I say, I saw Southampton against Newcastle last week and I don't think that's going to be the case this time. And you remember the home game at the Etihad last season was the one that finished with Pep putting his arm around Nathan Redmond and saying, oh, you're so good, you should be doing this, that and the other.
Yeah.
And Redmond, I had a look at this because he had a couple of chances last week against Newcastle. Him and El Yunusi, Danny Ings has scored half of Southampton's goals, so other people need to start chipping in.
One?
Yeah, four. Redmond got seven in his first season at Southampton. He got one last season and he hasn't scored yet this. And they need, because Charlie Austin doesn't score, Gabbiadini doesn't score, so they need some midfielders to start chipping in. But I've seen Southampton twice in recent weeks and they look like relegation fodder this season, unfortunately.
Okay, then.
Quick word on Monday night. The performance of the fullbacks is... We've kind of got used in the Premier League with the rise of... the 3-4-3 or 3-5-2 or the re-rise. And then you know, players like Marcus Alonso, who now apparently can just play on the left wing and do everything. The fullbacks were absolutely terrible on Monday night. I wonder about Pep with... I wonder if his patience in Mendy is running slightly thin because he's obviously not particularly impressed with his shenanigans, should we call it, his sort of social media persona. And his performances have been poor for the last few weeks. Yeah. But Tottenham, last season... Well, Kieran Trippier used the summer to make himself the new next best right back in the world. And Ben Davies was brilliant last season, but they are really struggling in the fullback areas. And it kind of feels like when they struggle, so do Tottenham.
Let's talk about the big game then on Saturday tea time. Arsenal taking on Liverpool, which, Daniel, you're going to.
Yes.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, they tend to be quite exciting affairs.
Yeah, I think it's potentially the game of the season so far, in that Arsenal have pretty much beaten everyone other than Palace last week that you'd expect them to beat, and lost to everyone better than them. And Liverpool are sort of grinding out results and getting it done, but I don't think that works this weekend. They have to come out and fire, because Arsenal's weakness is in defence, and it's, I think it'll just be a game where both teams kind of throw things forward. I expect goals, goals, goals.
Feels like a big test of this notion that Arsenal have changed, because their big issue was getting results against the other big six sides, or top six sides.
Yeah, I think...
And they've not been able to do that so far.
No, I mean, I think in Wenger's last season, the issue was not being able to beat anyone away from home, which they have kind of addressed. But yes, you're absolutely right. They have, over the last 4 or 5 years, have struggled against the biggest teams, and this is a massive test of that. I'm pretty sure Emery would take a draw now. I don't think Jurgen Klopp would, which is great, because it means that Liverpool will have to come in and attack Arsenal. It should be a really good game.
Mm.
But you have, I remember Guardiola after the 0-0 at the Anfield said, if you want to play sort of open, quick game against Liverpool, there's no one better at it than Liverpool, and you're probably only going to give yourself a 1% chance against them. And Arsenal, certainly over the last 3 or 4 years, that is how they've approached playing Liverpool, and they've always had 3 or 4 goals spanked against them. Mm. So Daniel's right in that we haven't seen Arsenal face a top side since the opening 2 weeks of the season. And even though they've been impressive in that run, keeping clean sheets has not been part of what's been good about them. And, you know, I think, you know, who's going to be playing left back in the...
If Mo Salah can tuck himself onto Stefan Lichtsteiner, who suddenly looks a very old footballer, having arrived in England, then, that's panic stations for Arsenal.
I read a great stat about Salah ahead of this game. So he scored in all 3 Premier League games that he's played against Arsenal, 1 for Chelsea, 2 for Liverpool. Only one player has a better 100% strike rate against the Gunners in the Premier League. Do you know who that might be?
I was going to say Bobby Zamora. It definitely won't be him.
No, but it's not a bad shout as a kind of random striker. Still playing.
Do you want to tell us later on, Matt?
Sure.
Okay, give us another little clue, because apparently if it's random, then...
I think I mentioned him not long ago.
What, in this show?
Yeah.
It's not David Nugent,
none of us
were
listening to Matt, were we? David Nugent.
No.
No, I just said that. You're not listening to me, are you?
I'm not listening to anyone.
Oh, my. This is like a Pinter play or something. Prediction, Matt?
Oh, I make Liverpool heavy favourites. I think they'll win by a couple of goals.
Heavy favourites. The other game featuring top five, Chelsea taking on Palace. Do you know, I bet you do know this, Matt, but Palace have actually won 2 of their last three trips to Chelsea.
And do you know who the managers were for those two trips?
Well, one was Alan Pardew.
Pardew and Allardyce, nonetheless.
That is strange. Chelsea will get the regulars back in, though, this weekend. Will normal service be resumed?
Yes, I would think so. Palace a bit better against Arsenal last week, but Chelsea obviously still unbeaten, if you don't count the Community Shield, which apparently we don't. Hazard back, Alonso back, Jorginho back will be the big one. That was what was really noticeable about the Derby game. Fabregas right. couldn't do what Jorginho did. He's very much Sarri's man on the pitch and pivotal to the way that Chelsea play. So he was the big miss.
Tricky period this for Palace. After this match, they have Spurs at Selhurst Park and then Man United away with an international break in between. Still to come on this Totally Football show, Bournemouth's clash with Man United and the other Premier League fixtures, and assorted fights, punches, flying coins, and that from around the world.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
Punches, fights, flying coins, that sounds quite lively. Let's go with that. Let's begin in Scotland. Tynecastle on Wednesday witnessed the Edinburgh Derby, Hearts and Hibs. Hearts, of course, the SPL leaders. A ferocious match, it was described as, Daniel. Ferocious. One supporter hit the Hearts keeper, Zdenek Zlamal. He goes to collect the ball, and then one visibly pokes him in the face. He goes down. But it's goalless. And then right at the death, Hearts score a late winner. Oh, but the referee's disallowed it. And then Neil Lennon larges it in front of the Tynecastle faithful, who don't take kindly to this. And somebody lobs a coin at him, and he goes down as if it's been lobbed from the Texas Book Depository, you know, basically. I know it's a bad thing, throwing coins, clearly.
Thank God it wasn't one of these new 50p pieces. Wow. I mean, that could have been lethal.
Anyway, but I'm not sure if Lennon A was wise to taunt the crowd in that way, and it clearly was. He was basically laughing at them. Mm. And also, you know, I think it struck him, which is obviously bad, but don't know if his tumble was quite commensurate with the impact. But anyway, but obviously a very bad thing, and no doubt there'll be all sorts of disciplinary measures. Sorry, Daniel, were you...
No. I did enjoy, after the game, Lennon said, this is supposed to be a place of football, not a place of violence. And given that he had pretty much said, come on then, to a crowd of around 5,000 people, having seen the linesman give an offside decision... it was a little bit rich. I mean, obviously, it was a stupid thing for everyone to have done.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope they can put all that behind them. Then, as Hearts go next to Celtic in a top of the table clash, Celtic who are now 4 points behind them after their 5-0 win over Dundee. Celtic who also beat Hearts 3-0 just last weekend. Anyway, here's us going all Scottish football. More of that with Andrew Slaven in the dedicated pod. Do you know it's top of the table clash this weekend in France as well? James Horncastle?
Yes, that'll be PSG against, is it Lille?
It is Lille. Yeah. Just the 8 points between them. Lille, who've turned their season, well, their fortunes around remarkably from their last campaign, as we discussed on Monday. At the other end of the table, Thierry Henry and his quest for his first win continue as Monaco travel to Reims. In Spain, Leo Messi's back training already.
Wow.
Yeah, he might be ready. He might be back for the Inter game next week in the Champions League.
Ooh.
But that's what they're saying anyway. Real Madrid did not get Antonio Conte, as we thought was going to happen on Monday, but they did get a win under their interim manager, Santiago Solari. Solari, the former Real Madrid Inter player, former police song title, of course, stepping in now and guiding them to a 4-0 Copa del Rey last 32 first leg victory over Union Deportivo Melilla out of Morocco. Well, not Morocco, but North Africa.
He started Vinicius, which is the kind of headline news, his first start for Real Madrid.
How did he do?
I think he was all right, apparently. He was lively. The central defender he was up against was booked very early on, which, by all accounts, helped him, gave him a little bit of freedom. But I think the assumption is that Solari is going to say, well, I'm here for a good time, not a long time, so I might as well try and bleed in some youngsters and kind of try and reinvent this team a little bit for the next manager.
In Italy, Wednesday night, Milan moved back into the Champions League positions.
Yeah.
A 2-1 win over Genoa.
Yeah, had to... got pegged back, unlucky own goal, but and then a very athletic and quite flamboyant finish in stoppage time from the guy who'd scored the own goal, Alessio Romagnoli, who, chipped Radu and sealed the win.
Do you think he meant that?
I think, I mean, the way he coordinates his body, I think he's just trying to get to it. He's
just to
reaching.
Keep it in play, basically. Yeah. So the ball comes back out from Radu, I think, and it's kind of a high ball, and he just sticks out a leg to try, and I think just to lob it back into the area.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm doing him a disservice. Maybe he actually thought, I can Ibra this from out here.
But it's, yeah, it looks special.
Certainly did.
Particularly from a centre-back.
Absolutely. Prior to that, as we mentioned, Inter beat Lazio 3-0. Lewis Wilkinson says, can Inter catch Juve at the top of the table? Any potential banana skins for them in fixtures ahead?
I think what was really encouraging, if you're an Inter fan, about that performance on Monday night, was by far the best display they've put in so far, which, if they can carry that on into the Barcelona game at San Siro, I think gives them a real chance of getting something out of that. And if they do, I mean, Spurs and PSV are already very much up against it. But I think Inter seem to be, I'm not going to say peaking, but hitting a sort of level of performance that they haven't had so far this season. As regards to getting closer to Juventus, I think it's going to be very,
well, it's all about December,
tough.
What, the 7th, is it, when they
Derby
face
d'Italia,
you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, that... Yeah. Oh, quick mention while we're on the subject of Italy for Vincenzo Iaquinta.
Oh, God, yeah.
Former Udinese striker, a member, of course, of Italy's World Cup 2006 team, yeah? Just got 2 years for basically... what is it, selling arms? No, it's illegal possession or...
Possession.
But it was the fact that he'd given the guns to his dad, who is... His dad is basically not allowed to have weapons because he's been known to frequent organised crime figures.
If I'm not wrong, got 19 years.
But then didn't.
Has he not got 19?
I thought that was... No. So because this is the point that... So, OK, we'll back up a bit. So Quinta's got a couple of pistols, which he has legally declared. They're registered, that's fine. But he also has a father, they're from Calabria, who has associates, and this could be entirely innocent, who are known to be connected or suspected of being connected with the 'Ndrangheta, which is the Calabrian mafia. Mm. As a result, he's not allowed to carry weapons, and... Yeah, Vincenzo Iaquinta, the footballer, or former footballer, gave him the two pistols, left them with his dad for safety, he said. But he didn't declare that to the police. Now, when a massive operation was launched against the kind of Calabrian mafia's infiltration of the north, which is turning up some very interesting stories over in Turin with Juventus, by the way, they found these guns and they basically threw the book at Iaquinta, and they actually sentenced him this week to 2 years, not just 2 years suspended, 2 years inside. He left the court shouting, shame on you. Yeah. I suffer like a dog. I, who have won a World Cup, you ruined my life because I'm from Calabria. I have to say, I feel bad for him. As his attorney was saying, you know, even the case against his father, I believe, has been dropped. I mean, it'll be appealed, but it's still crazy, no?
Yeah, and as you say, this is a story which is, I mean, they're separate investigations, but looking at how the 'Ndrangheta, which has become the very sort of prominent mafia in Italy, how it's kind of got its fingers into what is a very lucrative and rich world of football, is quite concerning.
Well, the case at Juve regards one of their former employees who jumped off a bridge, and possibly was the suspicion is that he might not have been.
He was the supporter liaison officer who used to be a capo ultra, and there's been an investigation launched about how the ultra groups in the Kuliva at the Juventus Stadium. Basically, the 'Ndrangheta realised that they were making a lot of money from selling tickets and wanted in on that. And obviously, whenever you've got individuals like that involved, tensions rise and things can go awry. Mm. So, yeah, this has been the focus of a big sort of panorama-style investigation in Italy over the last couple of weeks. And there's a ding-dong back and forth, really, between... The investigative journalists who've done a lot of work on this and the club who are trying to sort of bat it away. In addition to the accusations against Ronaldo, there are these accusations against Juventus. So, you know, while everything's rosy on the pitch, off the pitch, there's some storm clouds, I would say.
Yeah. Well, they'll be used to that. Let's have something a little bit more tranquil and wholesome. How about the Copa Libertadores? How did that go this week, Matt?
Yeah, follow that. Late VAR drama, basically, between Gremio of Brazil and River Plate of Argentina. Really, really, even by Copa Libertadores standards, this was quite extraordinary.
So Gremio from what? Down south in Brazil, aren't they?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And River.
River Plate, the this sort of...
Brazil and Argentina, etc.
There's a history there, yeah. So Gremio were 1-0 up from the first leg, which was in Argentina. The score was at 1-1 in the return this week. The ref then gave River a late penalty. It was awarded in the 88th minute, not taken until the 5th of 13 minutes of stoppage time, given for handball by Gremio's Matias Bresnan, who received a second yellow card.
What did you feel about the handball?
Well, I thought it was a handball, actually. I thought it was the right decision to give the penalty. It was from close range, but his hand was in an unnatural position, so I can see why they gave it. But the referee had to then, once he'd got the word in his ear, yes, penalty, yeah, he had to go and speak to the military police at the side of the pitch to tell them that he was about to give the penalty and they should prepare for what would happen thereafter. Penalty dispatched by Pity Martinez, so River win 2-1, go through on the away goals rule. Their equaliser, which came on 81 minutes from the Colombian Rafael Borre, was a handball by him, but the VAR team didn't spot that. Then more controversy post-match. Footage emerged showing River coach Marcelo Gallardo entering his team's dressing room at halftime. He was suspended for the game because he'd been bringing his team out late for the second half of matches consistently, so he wasn't supposed to be in the dressing room. He admitted that. It was filmed, and he also admitted that he had radio contact with his assistant on the touchline. So Gremio have appealed to CONMEBOL, the governing body, to have River kicked out of the tournament. We'll wait and see if that happens. More likely they'll get a fine. He'll get a touchline ban for the final. The Gremio coach, Renato Portaluppi, took the defeat in his stride. He said, "I'd rather lose 5-0 than lose it like this. I can't blame the referee on the pitch, but I can blame the VAR referee. Who was taking care of VAR? Was it Stevie Wonder? Everyone else saw it." So Portaluppi uptight. River hoping everything's all right and their place in the final will still be signed, sealed and delivered.
Matt, off the top of your head, that's quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Are those all Stevie Wonder songs?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So they're going to face Boca Juniors in the final, which is really exciting. They beat Big Phil Scolari's Palmeiras in their semi. Mm. And it's actually the first time, I was amazed by this, first time there's been an all-Argentine final in the Copa Libertadores in its history, and it's the Super Clásico. It's the last time this year it's going to be played over two legs. First leg at La Bombonera on the 7th of November, return
although they
on
may,
the 28th.
Apparently they may move these fixtures because you've got G20.
Right, okay.
In Buenos Aires.
Can they not move the G20?
Probably. Oh, wow.
But yeah, fascinating. And probably should mention that it's not been picked up by a UK TV broadcaster, but you can watch it via our friends at Paddy Power.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure they'll be delighted with that shout. So military police deployed in Brazil, probably not for the first time the way things are going there. And, you know, I'm sadly not joking. Finally, first round of playoffs in MLS went on Wednesday and is going on Thursday. I was able to enjoy New York City's fine 3-1 win over Philly Union in the frankly bizarre reconfigured Yankee Stadium, which is an affront to everything that football stands for. But I presume that City have a stadium being built. The folks at the Totally Football Show American edition, and by American we mean, you know, not just United States, but a whole, you know, Canada, etc. They'll be back with you on Friday. They'll know the answer to that. We do hope you enjoyed the taste of the Kobe Jones hosted show that we sent down the pipe this week. Bingo. All right, let's talk about other things after this. Joe Gallagher writes, "Could you please wish Cassia a very happy birthday? Because Cassia likes watching the Great Model Railway Challenge with a hangover."
Is there any other way?
Yeah, possibly. Fast forward with the fast forward button. That's the way to do it. Early kickoff this week, Saturday lunchtime, is Bournemouth Man United. One for the neutrals to get excited about, methinks. Lively Cherries and their camera-friendly manager, Eddie Howe, taking on the Grinch-like figure from the north, who's literally just cancelled Christmas. Man United's Christmas party, apparently, has gone the way of many of their, you know... It's basically gone.
Classic British football trope of this time of year, that, isn't it? Slightly struggling
quite
team cancels Christmas party.
Well, they cancel the Christmas party earlier each year, of course.
I'm looking forward to this game. I'm doing it for TalkSport International, our friend Alvaro Romeo's chief employer. It's a shame for Bournemouth that they've drawn Chelsea again in the cup, because I'd really like to see them win it. And it's obviously difficult for them going away to Stamford Bridge. It'd be great for Eddie Howe to win a trophy, particularly if he is going to replace Maurizio Pochettino one day. What will the likes of Harry Kane think about him coming into the dressing room? It would only be the League Cup, but he could say, hey, I've got a trophy in the cabinet.
It's more than Poch won.
Exactly. Well, more than Poch, really? More than Maurizio.
Do you think
Sarri
that would make a difference?
I think it potentially could.
Do you not think Spurs players would be pretty impressed with Eddie Howe anyway?
Yeah, that? Potentially. But if you're talking about going into a new stadium and, hey, we're going to be spending big money on players,
it's Spurs we're talking about.
Yes. So is Eddie Howe going to be able to attract big name players? I would wonder. But anyway, in terms of this game, might be a good one for United. Bournemouth haven't won any of the last five against them. And Romelu Lukaku, no goals in 9 for United, but 6-3 v Bournemouth.
So, is that right?
Yeah. Perhaps a good chance for him to get a shot.
They have a great record at the Vitality. They've won 2 of the last 3 by a scoreline of 5-1. So,
who, United have?
Yeah.
Really?
Are we calling this the league's most overperforming manager against the league's most underperforming manager? I think would be a fair case to make for both. Bournemouth are Eddie Howe's. It's an outrageous job. I think the suspicion recently has been that Howe is a great as a head coach, but maybe not as a manager of an elite club, in that his transfer record is slightly patchy. I mean, firstly, that maybe fits with the sporting director model anyway.
Right.
But secondly, I think if you look at some of the players he's brought in, like David Brooks has been one of the players in the league this season, yeah. I think. And he just now seems to have got a team around him that can source Football League talent as well. It's pretty much the whole shebang.
Jefferson Lerma as well has been
impressive. Yellow cards, Jefferson Lerma.
Oh, is he picking up a lot of
them? He loves the yellow card, yeah.
So they've still got Simon Francis and Steve Cook. You know, they've kept 3 consecutive clean sheets in the Premier League, and they've got players who were with them in League One in their team.
They've also got Ryan Fraser, who Michael Cox was saying on Monday should be in the conversation for player of the season.
It's a really nice story about Ryan Fraser. When he came down from Scotland, he was tiring late on in games, and he had a meeting with Eddie Howe and revealed to Eddie Howe that after every game he would have a large Domino's pizza and a tub of ice cream. As he, and these are his words, not mine, was kind of the standard in Scottish football at the time, he felt. And Howe basically said to him, you're not getting back into my team until you sort yourself out. And now he has. He's another one that in interviews calls Howe the little Pep Guardiola. He says from everyone he talks to Manchester City, they are incredibly similar in their outlook.
Right. Well, Pep's also against pizza and
well, just the obsession with detail in training, the obsession with kind of, it's become a buzz phrase now, but marginal gains and micromanagement of players' games, basically.
Just got an idea of, after that Hearts Hibs game, everyone going back home for a tub of ice cream and a pizza afterwards, you know.
You don't want a Domino's pizza, though, do you?
Well, I mean,
hang on, Domino's.
I've no objection to a Domino's pizza. It's very hard to get pizza wrong, I would say.
Plenty of people manage it.
Hey, do you know what? Actually, since we're on the subject of pizza, at last, one of the most often asked questions on Twitter is, "What's the name of that great pizzeria you guys were talking about on the podcast?" Now. James, I'm sure you've got a favourite in Trastevere in Rome.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What's that?
It's called Ai Marmi, which it's called Orbitorio because it's all the marble tables. Mm-hmm. It reminds you of a morgue.
Nice.
But it's very good, yeah. Viale Trastevere. Yeah, okay. It's nice.
I haven't had a pizza in Rome in too long, but back in the day, we used to go. It was quite an oily pizza, but if you're not unhappy with that, then Da Evo, it's a bit of an institution.
Is that a Roman pizza or a Neapolitan
pizza? It is a Roman pizza, nice thin
crust.
Then they had Pizzare, who were very much the Neapolitan, the big thick ones, and La Maremma up in Parioli, love that.
Have either of you tried David Luiz and William's Italian restaurant yet in Mayfair? Babu? Right.
Oh, Babbo.
Yeah.
No, I haven't been.
All right.
But yeah. Well,
William told me he'd give me a 5% discount on a meal for my wife and I if I mentioned it here.
Did he say that?
No, I suggested 5%. He said I can possibly do that. So that was very generous of him.
Bingo.
Big shout out for Peter's Pizzeria in Loughborough, where I'm going tonight. A Neapolitan family who run a pizzeria in Loughborough, and it is absolutely sensational.
That name again, Daniel?
Peter's Pizza.
Nice.
It's the Italian name that gives it the flair.
Anyway, pizzas.
Love it.
Oh, should mention this is a massive week, by the way, for Jose Mourinho, because after the trip to the Vitality Stadium, he's got to go to the Allianz Stadium in Turin to take on Juventus. Then he's at the Etihad next weekend. Oh. The good news is that he's got game-changing Marouane Fellaini potentially back for those matches. So
can I do a massive, not even a humble brag, just a brag and say I'm going to both games?
Both games? You're going to Turin?
Yes, I'm going to Tuesday night. I'm going to Inter Barça in Milan, and then I get the train, the short train journey to Turin on Wednesday for Juventus versus Manchester United. My younger self is a little bit sad that it's not the Delle Alpi. And
don't be sad. Did you ever go to the Delle Alpi?
No, but I wanted to.
You wouldn't be able to see the game, which, you know. Oh,
it's a miserable place, really. anyway.
Allianz Stadium is romantic, doesn't really give it to me, but
I hear what you're saying. All right then. So back to the Premier League, and Everton are taking on Brighton. We're on a great run of form. Three straight wins, three clean sheets, Brighton. Will that record survive their trip to Goodison?
They never won there.
Yeah. I mean, what's extraordinary about Brighton going on this run is they specifically targeted it. They knew that after a really difficult start to the season where they played a lot of the top six, that this is where they're kind of, they'd consolidate themselves in the Premier League and maybe even build on that. But these three wins, they've done it with, I'd say, the only new signing in the summer who's been in there is Yohan Bash, who's been playing on the right. Aside from that, it's almost exactly the team that they got promoted with. And they've been without Pascal Gross, who was so influential in keeping them up last year, with his delivery, be it from set pieces or open play. When he got injured, I think the thinking was that they'd just push Davy Proper up because Proper played in that position for PSV. And instead, he's been injured as well. And they're still managing to grind out these 1-0 wins. And you look who's playing right back for them. It's still Bruno. Bruno's been there, you know, for decades, who, you know, is very much the kind of spirit of that club. It's extraordinary, really. Mm. And it's one thing targeting a group of games and saying those are winnable games. It's another thing actually going and doing it. And aside from this game, which, you know, as Matt says, they never won at Goodison, they don't play another sort of top six, top seven side until mid-December. So this sort of period could be really quite fruitful for Brighton if they keep going along in the way they're going.
Right.
And we ought to give Chris Hughton a bit of praise. We've rightly done so to Eddie Howe. I think maybe because Bournemouth feel slightly more incongruous as a Premier League club because of the size of the ground and their history or whatever. But Chris Hughton, I don't know whether he bought the players in the summer, but there were no eye-catching buys particularly. None of them are particularly gelled. But as James says, they've still got a championship team, effectively, and they look like they'd be well clear of trouble this season.
In football in another guise, where you'd have coaches doing many different jobs, NFL style, I don't think there's a better defensive coach than Chris Hughton. The way he's got Duffy and Dunk playing.
So your perfect NFL style coaching lineup, you'd have him as the defensive coach.
Yeah, I'd have Pep Guardiola on tactics. Uh-huh. I'd have Jurgen Klopp as an attacking coach.
I'd have Steven Gerrard on the press conferences.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just Neil Lennon as a sort of touchline motivator.
Very nice. Quick question here from Paul McIntosh. Looking ahead to the rest of the season, which is the easiest thing to rectify? Newcastle learning how to score or Fulham learning how to defend? Whose shoes would you rather be in at this point? Let's address that question after this. Right, so that question, which was an excellent one, about whose shoes would you rather be in? Fulham learning to keep a clean sheet or Newcastle learning to score goals? Fulham this weekend are at Huddersfield. Newcastle hosting Watford. What do you think, Daniel?
I think Fulham's problem is easier to solve in that it's a lot less complex. I don't think Newcastle's problem is just scoring goals. I think that's probably a symptom of the disease. Whereas with Fulham, I honestly believe that if they lose to Huddersfield this weekend, then Jurcanovic will be the first manager to be sacked in the Premier League this season. We are well overdue a managerial sacking, and it is the international break coming up.
Does the same go for David Wagner, by the way? Is there any sense that he might be running out of time?
No. The Dean Hoyle, the Huddersfield Town chairman, has said that even if Huddersfield are relegated, then they will keep faith in Wagner, and that would be the right thing to do. The way he leaves that club is someone making him a very good offer. I do worry that he's, as I said it before, I do worry that he's slightly missed his chance. He was slightly bizarrely, it seems now, mentioned for the Chelsea and Borussia Dortmund jobs in the summer, and they now seem a kind of world away.
Do you think Huddersfield can finally score against a Fulham team that's conceded 15 in the last four matches?
Yeah, I do think they will score. I think Fulham will win, but I think Huddersfield will score. But I do think Huddersfield will go down, and I don't think Fulham will.
Mm. If Huddersfield don't score, they'll be only the second team in English football history not to score in their first six home games, the other one being Mansfield in 71-72.
Great stat. Mm. Well, anyway, that game's coming up on Monday evening. Follow that, Champions League. Newcastle on Saturday afternoon, taking on Watford. The first of what Jack Lang boldly called on Monday their five winnable games. A Watford team who destroyed Huddersfield last time out, scored five, conceded none in their last two games. Now, it's true, though, that Watford, they used to struggle away from home. Didn't they? Have they resolved that?
Yeah, there was a kind of suspicion that they, in inverted commas, didn't fancy it. But yes, I think they have addressed that now. I think that I can't back Newcastle to win any game at the moment. They have had some good news the morning we speak. Jamal Lascelles signed a new six-year contract. Oh. And those length of contracts always worry me because they make it look like transfer fee maximisation rather than anything else.
Or it's like the Pards contract that they gave him, which
what was that, 8 years?
8 years.
Yeah. That was extraordinary. Are they still paying? They would still
there
be
were,
paying.
There were, now. It should be said, rumours of which I'll not mention about that contract.
Okay. All right, moving along. Watford actually won this game. Here's me talking about their away record, but they were 3-0 winners at St James's Park.
Won the last four last between season. These two.
Oh, have they?
Mm.
Okay.
I like how Jack determined these were winnable games when Newcastle have played Cardiff, they played Palace, they played Brighton, they played Southampton. I mean, they've already had plenty of what you would call winnable games.
Indeed so. Cardiff, I mean, look at the situation down the bottom. Everyone from West Ham down, but there's eight teams either in or within a bad game of the bottom three. Cardiff in it, of course. They are hosting Leicester mid Saturday afternoon. Foxes confirming that game will go ahead. West Ham, same time, will be taking on Burnley. Both teams desperate for a win here. No, Burnley conceded nine in two games. Hammers have only... It seemed like they'd sorted themselves out, but no.
No, they look bad again. I was reading a few supporters after the Spurs game saying this really, for all the bells and whistles and a bit more glitter being stuck onto the club, this feels very similar to last season.
Really?
Which suggests there's something inherently rotten within the core of that club, and there are plenty of West Ham supporters who agree with that.
Well, they do have one or two issues at the moment with Yarmolenko out for a long time. Mark Noble will be suspended for this. Arnautovic, I think, is still in doubt. Andy Carroll is back in training. They could do with Joe Hart replicating his form for them last year.
Well, this was the game last season that had the multiple pitch invasions, wasn't it, of course? West Ham Burnley at the London Stadium. I saw Burnley last week against Chelsea and I was amazed by how meek they were. It almost made me wonder if maybe the Sean Dyche messages or method has come to its natural conclusion with that squad of players. It was a really, really standoffish performance from Burnley, which would worry me greatly if I supported them.
I hesitate to use the word interesting, but there's a statistic in that Burnley basically for a long time in the Premier League until I think April had gone 62 games in the Premier League without conceding more than three goals in a game, which for a team with one of the weakest teams in the Premier League is playing some very, very strong teams is a pretty good effort, and I think they've done so four or five times in the last 12 games.
Wow.
So there is a sense that, as you say, Matt, that they've kind of they're just capitulating a little bit. That steel that they had last season is not there.
We shall see if it returns. Saturday at 3 o'clock, they are at West Ham. And, of course, more pitch invasions this week in the clash with Spurs for Hammers at the London Stadium. All right, very shortly, we'll be asking, what's your favourite John Candy movie on behalf of a listener? Random question of the week. Have a think about that. Yeah. First, let's get the odds on some of the weekend's games and more. Producer Ben has been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power is on the line. Lee, Carabao Cup. Quarterfinals have been made. Who are the favourites?
It's the usual suspects. You'll be not surprised at all to hear, with Man City favourites, despite at the time of recording not having played their round of 16 game yet. You know the favourites here. They lead Chelsea, Arsenal and Spurs in the betting. Leicester are rated as the best of the rest at 18-1.
OK, let's talk about the Premier League this weekend. A very juicy fixture at the Emirates. Arsenal versus Liverpool. There have been loads of goals, as we've been mentioning in the show, in this fixture. Could you give me the odds, please, on six or more goals?
Yes, yeah, quite a short price. Obviously, it's 3-3 last time they played, and it's 13-2. There are six or more goals this time around. Granit Xhaka scored in that last meeting and at the weekend, so maybe that's some sort of sign. He's 25-1 to open the scoring here.
All right, at the bottom of the table, it's happening on Monday night, but let's look at it now anyway. Huddersfield versus Fulham, 0-0.
Well, it's hard to imagine Fulham keeping a clean sheet, but then again, it's not much easier to picture Huddersfield scoring. So possibly it's 9-1 actually for a 0-0. It's a decent price. Or if you really want to go crazy, you can bet on Fulham keeping the clean sheet at 3-1. But I wouldn't be tipping that up.
And let's go continental to finish this off. The next Real Madrid manager. We all thought that Antonio Conte was done and dusted and would be in by now, but he's not. Is there any likelihood in, as Graham Hunter said this time last week, Jurgen Löw coming in?
Well, I listened to Hunter's tip and I put a pound on it last time at 50-1. And he's now into 33-1. So that's some progress. Better progress than Conte. Santi Solari is the odds-on favourite given that he's in possession. Second favourite is Maurizio Pochettino. Level with Roberto Martinez in the betting. That's the Roberto Martinez, yes.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Matt, how's Torres' relegation battle going in Japan?
It's not going brilliantly, so I'm going to see the next leg of it at the weekend. Segun Tosu, his team, going to VFR and Nagasaki, who are rock bottom. Tosu are in the relegation playoff place. They did win 3-2 at Vigalta Sendai last week, and Torres scored in that. That's just his second goal in 13 J-League appearances.
Brilliant. You're doing the commentary for this clash?
Certainly am, yeah.
Super. Danny Stewart, seeing as it would have been his 68th birthday on Wednesday, what is your favourite John Candy film? Danny makes a prediction here. He says, I predict Uncle Buck from Jimbo, whereas he thinks Horncastle is a Cool Runnings kind of guy. Is it true?
Feel the rhythm. Feel the ride. I do love Cool Runnings. I don't know why, but I was always moved by his performance in Home Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I would like John Candy to get my mother back. If I was alone at home at Christmas.
Damn, what age were you when you saw this?
I don't know. I mean, it's maybe what, 7, something like that. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's going to traumatize. That's like Bambi's mother dying for another generation. Daniel,
Uncle Buck was the film that I would watch on repeat as a kid.
Really,
as a kind of know every line. I absolutely love that film.
Absolutely. Not even close for me. Uncle Buck by a wide margin. Still got the DVD. Culkin on top form as well as Candy. The dream ticket.
I like Uncle Buck. However, I'm surprised that, and I know they're minor roles, that Blues Brothers, where he has my favourite line in the movie, orange whip, three orange whips. And also, kind of left field, but he has a brilliant turn as a lawyer in JFK. I always enjoy seeing a comedian like doing something a bit darker. And Planes, Trains and Automobiles, on the other hand, I did not enjoy at all. And, contact me for further details. But anyway. All right, anyway. So, but great question. John Candy. Apparently, on the day he died, there was a big lump of quartz in the family home. He was on location. And it just shattered.
As a slight aside from that story and bringing it back to football, I know a guy who for a long time worked as one of the stadium managers at the City Ground Forest, and on the day that Brian Clough passed away, they heard the news, they're out on the pitch and they heard the news, and they went back into their kind of mess room and the clock had stopped in the City Ground in their mess room. So
at the time that he died?
Yeah,
you're not
within
sure, but let's say yes.
Let's say 20 minutes within, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it took time for the message to get through to the ghosts.
I really want it to be at the time.
Yeah, virtually at the exact time, yes.
Wow. Great way to finish our Halloween special.
Do you want the answer to my quiz question?
Oh, crikey.
I want another clue.
Yeah, so what was the question again?
Okay, so Mohamed Salah scored in all three of his Premier League games against Arsenal, one for Chelsea, two for Liverpool. Only one player has a better 100% strike rate against the Gunners in the Premier League. So this particular person has scored 4 times against Arsenal.
Frank Lampard?
No.
Cesc Fabregas?
No. English, not an international.
Jody Morris?
No. Currently playing in the Premier League.
Glenn Murray?
No. Close, though. Yeah, in that kind of ballpark.
You mentioned him already in the show, haven't you?
Andy Carroll?
No.
Go on then, Matt.
First letter of his first name.
C.
Charlie Daniels.
Charlie Austin.
Charlie Austin.
Of course, that's the one I meant.
Yeah, that's very much it. James very much passed me the ball in front of goal there.
Austined it home.
Yeah. No, I scored.
Very nice. Very nice. So, anyway, that's it for Totally Football Show. We will be returning on Monday. How about this for an eclectic lineup? Sasha Gurionov, Melissa Reddy, and Benji Lagnardo. So that's going to be an interesting panel as we review all the weekend's action. Hopefully, listener, you'll be part of the Totally Party as well. Have a great weekend in the meantime. From all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.